You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY. DIY.
Oh. Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 262 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where in today's episode, we're going to be discussing online advertising and what artists need to know about online advertising, some strategies around it, and a new tool that we have at CD Baby that does this very thing. So we're going to be excited to talk about that. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how you doing?
Doing good. I'm about to head on vacation for a little bit and get some sunshine, but I did have a tip for everyone, which is that
what's up? I think I know what this is. So
is it about Spotify?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I was going to have you mention it.
Oh, good. All right. So, yesterday I looked on Spotify for artists because it had been almost a week since I put out a new single. And I noticed that at the time, I think it was 72%, but if I think it actually might be 80% when I looked this morning. 80% of the streams that I've gotten on this song on Spotify were driven by Release Radar, which is the algorithmic playlist generated for each individual Spotify user. And so I tweeted about that, basically sharing that statistic and reminding everyone that it's super important to do the distribution process correctly for every song, every album that you put out, and make sure you do it with enough time so that you can go into the Spotify for Artists system and pitch them a track from your upcoming release, because that is the very thing that guarantees it will end up on Release Radar for your followers. So very important to do, and it has driven 80% of the streams for my song.
Yes. You know, that's something that I've noticed in Spotify, the app itself, that they are doing a much better job of featuring the new releases. So, for example, I don't remember getting the email. Maybe I didn't look at it. But normally when you release something, Chris, on a Friday or whatever day, on Saturday morning is when I get the email from Spotify that says, here's the new releases you might like. And you are always in there. And I open up my app. And if you haven't noticed on your home screen, a lot of these updates seem to happen when they started featuring podcasts as well. But those same musical selections that they feature in the email to you are highlighted there as well. So then I see you again, Chris. And I must have gotten the email, because when I open my Spotify app, you are there. And then, then in your Release Radar playlist, your tracks will be there as well. So there's multiple places where they are pushing your music, and it's free. All you have to do is plan your release properly. And it's also very key that you get people to follow you on Spotify, because those are the people that get this. So if people are fans, you need to make sure you encourage them to follow you on Spotify if they're using Spotify. Don't tell all your Amazon Music fans to go follow you on Spotify, because they're not listening there. But anyway, very important. And I think it plays into some of what we're going to talk about today with advertising and strategies around advertising and trying to get fans to do very specific things.
Yeah. And with our show.co tools that we have through CD Baby, there's a lot of different Spotify-related campaign objectives you could set. You know, we've got a pre-save, we've got a save to playlist, there's stream to unlock. There's a whole bunch of different things you can do. But following, increasing your following, I think, is really probably the number one thing you should be doing, because, a save is nice, but that's only a save for one song. Whereas if you're boosting your following and do the distribution process correctly every time, those people you can return to over and over and over again through Release Radar.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, that plays into the conversation we had last week about what Daniel X said about releasing more frequently. They've built this engine that pushes your music. And if you release more frequently, they're going to keep pushing your music. If there's no new release, there's other ways where your music can surface and be highlighted. But the new release, Just like it was, you know, when we were concerned about getting press, and we're still concerned about getting press, but it was like the new release is the key thing that people gets people motivated to talk about your band, gets people motivated to come out to a show. It's what motivates streaming platforms, specifically Spotify, to push your music out to users. So this is one area where, yes, artists should get paid more, but this is one area where streaming has been superior to other platforms or other formats in the past. It is pushing your music out there, and you just got to understand where the opportunities are.
What's up in your life now that I gave my...
Well, we're in the middle of wrapping up recording a new album. You know, a couple months ago, I went out to Georgia in a farmhouse on 80 acres in the middle of nowhere. The nearest town was 30 miles away. It was kind of frightening how far out in the middle of nowhere I was.
You were very socially distanced.
Yes. The only person around, well, not even a person, this farmhouse had a peacock that stands in the sliding glass window just staring in at us the whole time. A live peacock. His name's George. And so if you go to the Small Town Poets Instagram feed, you can see George and all the recording that we've been doing. So that's been fun. We're sort of wrapping it up. And it was one of those things where I kind of set this lofty goal for the guys, like, we got to get it done by this date. And I think we might actually do it.
First.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. We said, you know what? We need to do something very different with this album. We can't just be rewriting, you know, the classic Small Town Poets sound and songs, and so it's some very different stuff. I think it might be our best album yet. But ooh, artists always say that.
Well, I mean, honestly, hopefully artists always feel like that's true, because otherwise you haven't really grown or changed. Or wouldn't it be a bummer if you were like, hey, we just got done with a new record? I'd say it's our fourth best album. Like,
yeah, so we're trying to finish that up, because if we don't finish it up by, if we can't get it out and leave the appropriate time for the Spotify pitching tool and release radar opportunities and all that, if we can't get it done and live by the end of October, we'll have to kick it to the new year, because especially in our genre, once Christmas hits, people just put on the Christmas music, and I feel like in our genre, that makes it harder to break through the noise. I don't know. Maybe it's easier. I don't know. It used to be a coveted release cycle, releasing a new album at Christmas, because people go buy it as gifts. Now you're just trying to, you're being drowned out by Feliz Navidad. And
yeah, there's a whole lot of Mariah Carey and Michael Bublé. And
so anyway, yeah, so that's what's been going on. I'm busy with that. And yeah, a few other items that we're working on that I'll save for a later episode. But we are talking about online advertising. First off, I should say, part of the reason why we're talking about this is that our free marketing tool, Show.co, if you haven't used it, you should go to your CD Baby dashboard and get connected to it. It's free for you, but it does Spotify pre-saves. It does YouTube premieres. It does all these great marketing functions for you that we'll probably get into some a little bit later. But it also has an advertising platform built in, and we just added a new ad type. And it's interactive ads, and it allows you to instantly turn any Spotify link or YouTube video into an interactive ad. So all you have to have is a YouTube video, a Spotify link. It even works with SoundCloud and Apple Music. So you have one of those links, you drop it into the ad platform, it creates this nice looking ad, you can add a call to action, and away you go. Your ad is ready. And these ads have been performing at pretty consistently at a rate of 4 times the amount of engagement compared to a regular ad. So people are on a website like the campaign I ran recently. My ad was on Billboard. It was on Pitchfork. It was on all these big music sites. And people see the ad. All they got to do is click the play button. Your video plays right there in the website, same with the Spotify link or a SoundCloud link or an Apple Music link. And it's so much more engaging than seeing something that takes them somewhere else. So very interesting results, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, and just to repeat basically what you said, so it's totally clear, a sort of traditional static banner ad would be just a picture. That's what it is. It's a clickable picture. It takes you somewhere else. These have interactive content in them, a YouTube video that's playable, a Spotify player that's playable right there. The person doesn't have to leave the site they're on if they're on Pitchfork or wherever. Like, they don't have to go anywhere, which means they can start playing your content and then, you know, potentially kind of get immersed in that. Or if they're really, you know, want to find what they were there to find, they can still do that and scroll through this, but still engage with your music. And then if they're really into that, there's still that button they can click to go where you want to send them. So yeah, very exciting and super simple to create. It takes you a couple minutes maybe.
Yep. And for our podcast listeners, I have a coupon for you to get 10 free dollars for advertising. And the code is podcast10. So I think you can remember that, podcast10, and you'll get 10 bucks towards a campaign. The minimum buy is 20 bucks. So you're still going to have to pony up 10 bucks, but it's still 10 free dollars. And yeah, you can go try this out to put it towards a campaign. And you don't just have to do the minimum. You can do 50 bucks and or 100 bucks because it all depends around your strategy. So, and we're going to talk some about that because both Chris and I have been doing a lot of testing with these ads, trying different things, learning some best practices, maybe learning some things to avoid. But before we get into some of that, let's talk a little bit about the reality of the market and really how people should be thinking about what they're trying to accomplish when they're running ads.
I think that there's quite a few artists out there who are going to hear us mention advertising and immediately feel resentful in some way. Like, hey man, I spend a bunch of money already on gear and making my music, and like people should just love it now. Why do I have to do more? Shell out more money just to get people to hear it, right? So there's a number of ways to get attention in this world. And, you know, you mentioned the reality of the market. So we have to acknowledge that it's completely saturated. More music being made than ever before. Literally thousands upon thousands upon thousands of new releases every single day. And at the same time, admit it, people's attention spans, including all of our listeners, are shrinking by the year. And so more music, and yet people have less focus on any individual artist or in song or release, which means it's really, really hard to get noticed just because you're there. I mean, you can't expect to just put music out and then have people hear it just because. So you have to work to get noticed. And that could mean you're doing really creative free promotion and publicity, word of mouth type stuff. You know, you're putting in a lot of effort and being really creative about how you get attention for free. But spending money is also a big part of the equation oftentimes. And particularly for, like, you know, big successful acts, they are spending a ton of money up front to get that attention, just like any business does. Like when you start a business and you're an entrepreneur, you basically build into your business plan that you're going to be losing money for a few years. And you make those investments to spread the word. And advertising is a way to do that. So that's kind of my quick summary of why you should get over the fact that you are being asked to spend money in order to get attention these days.
Yeah. Our friend Jason over at Foundy, who their engine powers our ads, wrote an article using one of my ads as a case study. And the title is "Attention is the New Currency." And it's really true. It's not even just clicks or streams. It's real attention. And I think when you think about it that way, there's still, you've got to be looking at how can you create a moment where you have someone's undivided attention, because it's hard. And a lot of the platforms out there, like Facebook advertising and, you know, some of the things that we've become familiar with, especially Facebook advertising and Instagram advertising, if you look at the stats, it can be real easy to think your ad is performing better than it probably is. Like, I've got all these video views, why aren't I gaining more fans? And you look at it and go, oh, Facebook is literally counting 1 second as a view. And that's not even really anyone viewing. That just means it really slid across their screen as they scrolled. Then 3 seconds is kind of something that they optimize towards. 10 seconds is like considered a lot. In 10 seconds, I don't know if I like your music. You may not even have gotten past the keyboard swell.
Right.
That's why, you know, in the episode where we've talked about video, where I'm like, hey, maybe you make the video where it starts at the hook. We don't need to hear the intro because your goal is different, right? You know, when you're creating video ads and things like that. So I think a lot of the platforms and things like, you know, the playlist pitching services have gotten us to be lazy or think certain stats matter or are more meaningful than they really are.
Yeah, well, and then in mentioning that attention is a new currency, it's also worth expanding on that in a way and realizing that you're not just fighting for attention once. It's not just about the single impression, you know, where maybe magically whatever you put out there in an ad or as social content or whatever is so cool and captivating that everyone just clicks on it and they start engaging. Like, even in fighting for attention, you have to realize that there's this thing called the rule of 7, or maybe it's the rule of 8 or 13 or 2 or whatever. But the idea is that one time is not enough. And advertisers have known this for 100 years or more, that you have to keep hitting people over the head with the same or similar messages before they actually register and say, this seems kind of familiar. Now I'm curious. And so if you have to reach someone with an ad 7 times before they care enough to click, you know, it's just a different way of thinking about attention. It's a different way of thinking about what your expectations should be from an ad. And it kind of helps you. I think you were saying that people look at stats and almost have a rosy picture, like, oh, my Facebook video got seen 300,000 times. And you're kind of deflating them, saying, yeah, but they only watched, you know, 2 seconds of it. I think the flip side can be true as well when we look at advertising results and say, oh, you know, I spent X amount of money and I only got, you know, whatever, 30 clicks or something. And that somehow that makes you feel bad. When in reality, if you understood how difficult it is to get attention, to get someone to stop in their tracks and then to be wowed enough to click the thing so that they go to your music and, you know, sort of investigate you further, it's a big ask. And when you have a sort of more complete picture of what it takes to get attention, I think it is a healthier mindset and maybe is more encouraging about the possibility of online advertising.
Yeah. And yeah, I think you got to have a bigger picture about that. It's more of a holistic approach. I think one of the big mistakes artists make when they get into the world of I'm going to advertise, it usually starts by, I'll push the boost button on Facebook. And then maybe they start going down the rabbit hole of like, oh my gosh, there's all these options. And now I'm trying to target. And there's some amazing things you can do. But I think one of the big mistakes artists make is they think, I've got $50 to spend. I'm expecting a $50+ return on streams from my $50 ad spend or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's just not the reality of how you should be thinking about advertising and using these tools to your advantage, because what you're probably doing is it's like walking into a party. Everyone's chatting and you walk up to them and say, hey, buy my thing for $20. And they don't buy it. And you're like, I just blew all my money. It's all gone. And it's like, no, you need to warm up an audience. You need to have an idea of what you want people to think and know and what direction they should be heading, and understand it's an ongoing conversation because you're trying to make real fans. And while I mentioned like some of these tools, I think it's easy to go on like SubmitHub, which is a great tool. It's very affordable. And put in some cash and get some streams back, but a lot of them could be just total meaningless streams. They might help your stream counts look a little bit more vibrant, but I don't know that you're making any fans.
Sure, right. You mentioned someone spending $50 and then expecting to get $50 in return from whatever they're advertising, and I'm laughing because if literally every artist had that return immediately on their advertising dollar or on any investment they're making, like, everyone would be famous. To get 100% return on what you're spending, just that would be amazing.
But that is not how it works.
That's not how it works.
No.
You sort of, you mentioned the word, I think, holistic or global or something like that. And that made me think of another benefit to online advertising is it can help you create a halo effect, which is simply that, you know, multiple things are firing at once and the sum is greater than the parts, or, you know, something like that. So if you're doing PR or a playlist campaign or both and happen to also be advertising, you know, it has a global effect where people are seeing your message suddenly in multiple places. And even if they don't click on that ad, it's reinforcing the fact that you're there, you're cool, you're seen, they should take interest in some form. And I think when we think about the cost of traditional media buying or you know, radio ads or TV ads or even print ads, that stuff was super expensive. And when you compare it to online advertising, which is very, very, very affordable, you have this multi-purposed, I don't know how to describe this exactly, but basically what I'm saying is not just about the click. It's not how many people actually finally took the action you wanted them to take. You might have thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of impressions along the way, which are kind of planting the seeds for that rule of seven, you know, building awareness and also helping for the halo effect.
Yes, absolutely. Let's move into talking about some of the differences between like our ad platform, Facebook ad platform, maybe how you should strategize using each. I know that, you know, we're going to spend a good deal of time talking about what we did with Show.co's interactive ads, because that's what we were testing and what this episode is really about. But I think one big difference that when you're thinking about what can I do on a various platform and why we might be getting such great results with the interactive ads through Show.co is that, you know, I did the premium ads because there's different tiers you can do. And it does different things based on what you set it at. Like I targeted premium websites where you can just target music fans and you'll show up on, you know, a lot of like weekly pages like or search pages and things like that. But I chose the premium ads. And so here are some of the sites that my ad was on. Radio.com, Discogs.com, which if you don't know what Discogs is, it's a huge website for people, for audiophiles, people that love, a lot of them love physical product, but it's become more of like just a database in general. Billboard.com, PasteMagazine.com, StereoGum.com, Loudwire.com, Spin.com, iHeart.com. So one thing I can say about all these websites where my ad appeared is the people that were on those websites were actively engaged in looking for music or reading about music, doing something related to music. To me, that's one key distinction between what I know about the ads that I'm running on our platform compared to using Facebook ads. Yes, on Facebook ads, I can target music fans, but I'm interrupting them with my ad. I have no idea what they're doing. They're looking down a feed that has a lot of random information, stuff that their friends are posting. Then here comes my video. It may catch their eye. It may not. They may be in a mood for music. They may not. They may be somebody who loves us, but they're kind of like not interested at this moment. But I do know on these particular websites that the people are actively engaged with something related to music and searching music, looking at music. So when my ad shows up on Paste Magazine, to me, it makes sense that an interactive ad on Paste Magazine would perform at a much higher rate like we're seeing, because I'm already on that website clicking play buttons and listening to music. So seeing something that catches my eye on the website and clicking the play button seems like a natural thing to do for what that person is doing and actively engaged in on those websites.
Yeah. And I mean, I did a bunch of different testing and like you said, that we have three different kind of tiers of audiences that you can target. And the premium level that you're talking about is that your ads will be placed on those premium sites. So I was on Billboard, Pace Magazine, Pitchfork, Rolling Stone, Spin, NME, Guitar World, Stereo Gum, like, you know, prestige kind of music publications, which is cool. The next level down is targeted, which is basically like, okay, we're going to hit music fans, but we're going to hit them when they're on other sites. So like we know who they are, but it's on the local art weeklies or Discogs, things like that. And then I'm forgetting what the sort of the lowest tier is, but do you remember what that one's called?
It's like called Discovery.
That's right. And that's kind of like, you know, it's for your budget. You're going to cast the widest net. But in clarifying what those audiences are, I was going to say that no matter what you and I say for the rest of this episode, it is by no means a critique of Facebook's ad platform. I think that is a very amazing tool, super powerful. This is just a sort of slightly different way of advertising what we're going to be talking about today. And I think the things that I would be comparing my show.co ad experiences against are Instagram stories ads, because that's the most recent campaign I ran to test against show.co. So at some point we can go into the differences there.
I think, you know, the interesting thing is, and where we're going with this platform is, you know, when you're on using Facebook ads, which are great, you're in a closed ecosystem. It's on Facebook. You're targeting people that are using Facebook, and everything must stay in that ecosystem, pretty much. I mean, you can link people out with your ad, but you're only going to target people on Facebook. With what we have here, you're targeting anybody on the web. And so the activities people are doing are different. And like I was saying, these are targeting people on music websites or music fans, or in all cases, it's targeting music fans, but it's whether it's casting a wide net or being more specific, it just, you're able to zone in on what they're actually doing as it relates to, it's more in context into what they're doing. I'm actively looking for new bands on Pitchfork. Oh, here's an ad for a new band. I'll click the link.
Yeah.
So that's one key difference, where Facebook is more of like this social graph that has all this information about people, where you can slice and dice and go find the people that you think match the people that like your music. Where what we're doing with the ad builder platform inside of show.co is we're allowing you to target people more in context of them doing things music related. And ultimately, we're going to have a feature where you can retarget these people. So anybody who clicks on your ad, you can put them in a pool and retarget them with advertising. So you know they've already seen your ad, they've done something with your ad, and they've clicked, or you know, just sort of refining an audience and building a funnel and and driving that attention.
Yeah, it's exciting. And it's powerful, but it's also, I don't want to call it an easy button because that makes it sound sort of dumb, but this show.co interactive ad builder really does take a lot of the kind of the geeky tweaking. That sounds bad. I don't mean like drug tweaking, but you know, like the tinkering, the people that get into ads and tinker. I mean, obviously there's a great skill in that. And sometimes you can refine your ad to really optimize it, but this kind of starts you off with way less work, and literally in minutes you can launch something that, I mean, at least in my testing for me, outperformed my Instagram stories video ads. So
interesting. Yeah. Do tell, because you and I talked about one of your earlier campaigns and talked about, hey, here's how we think about optimizing it. And then I launched one based on that conversation, but I haven't heard about your this one. So I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah. Okay. So apologies in advance if I am talking too much ad lingo to those who are not.
I'll be your translator.
Okay. And then and also apologies to the ad geeks amongst you if I'm a little bit too vague. But basically, what I did was I ran a 15-second vertical video as an Instagram Stories ad, and it was to drive Spotify listens. And I have done a bunch of video ad stuff previously on Facebook and had good results. This time around, doing the Instagram Stories ad format was really disappointing for me. And there's a few reasons why. One, it didn't seem to, like, the results, the clicks that I was seeing weren't correlating to streams. and the territories in which those clicks were happening, it wasn't correlating to increased listenership in those territories when I'd check in Spotify for artists and stuff. So there was this real sense of like, what is going on here? Like, and you know, there was further optimization that can be done to, you know, account for some of those variables. But again, that's quite a bit of work. So when I ran a series of show.co ads, right off the bat, the cost per click for what I would say international markets, like non-English speaking and non-EU type countries and territories, was roughly the same as Instagram stories clicks. But for English speaking and EU clicks, it was cheaper on show.co than for IG stories. And then to remind everyone again, I was feeling like the results I was getting on those IG stories ads weren't correlating to anything that felt tangible. I wasn't seeing my streams go up, followers, I was, you know, nothing. So, so right off the bat, I'm spending less money to reach more people through show.co, and I'm actually seeing some of those correlations with increased stream counts and stuff like that. But then here's the next thing I want to say is I think maybe the real benefit of show.co when compared to something like an Instagram stories ad. So I ran that stories ad as its own ad post. It's, you know, what would you call it? A dark post or a kind of a ghosted post. It's basically, it's only existing as an ad. So it's not stacking up proof of views. There's no comments feed that's happening and people are getting excited and having ongoing conversations where I can, you know, get to know someone. And there's none of that happening. It's just this ad and it either does something or it doesn't. People either respond to it or they don't, and then it's gone. However, the ad content of the interactive ads through show.co, that content itself was a monetized play on Spotify, or in the case when I did YouTube videos, it's a play. So the ad itself is leading to a potentially monetized a stream or play, which is also being counted towards your play count. And that's just the ad itself, let alone whether people are clicking. And then given that difference again was that more people were clicking on show.co for cheaper amounts of money in the EU and English speaking markets. I was really, you know, wanting to build my audience. So that's kind of one thing, comparing it to Facebook and Instagram. I have more things to say, but I feel like I should shut up for now.
I feel like we need charts and graphs, because a lot of what you said is very important to understand. And it reminded me that I also did an Instagram story video test. I didn't compare it to my campaigns on show.co because I did it, this was probably 2 or 3 months ago when that was just something I was testing out. And I had the similar experience where on face value, and I think I even showed it to you, I was like, this is really performing well and it's performing in a younger demographic than we normally get. And it was like all the clicks were coming from people under 24 or something like that, like 18 to 24, which sort of was on one hand, oh, that's cool. But another like, I don't know about this. So anyway, but it looked really good. And then, so after the ad was running for long enough, same thing, I went into Spotify and a lot of these clicks were coming from other countries that if they were actually doing anything, I would see in my Spotify stats, and I was not. And like you mentioned, a key thing about the ads, these interactive ads, is you drop a Spotify player like Lincoln and it creates a player right there in the ad. So any play that happens natively on a website anywhere, they don't even have to click through. If they hit that play button, it is a monetized stream. If they click the video button, on your YouTube video, it is a true play.
It's just occurring to me how simple it is to explain this. But when you're running ads on Facebook or Instagram, the goal is usually to get them to a monetized stream or video play, right? And this bypasses all that. And the ad itself is the end goal that you might have for other formats of or other channels and mediums of advertising.
Yeah. So it's like you're not necessarily asking somebody to leave Pitchfork to stream your song or to watch your video. they can do it right there. And they're already there doing those kind of things. So that's, you know, why we're seeing a lot higher results. People just like pushing that play button. One thing I was going to say, like based on that experience that we both had with those Instagram stories tests that were driving people to Spotify, where we felt like we didn't get any results and spent a decent amount of money. That was the other thing. I'm like, whoa, got to turn this off because this is not doing anything. Then just trying to think, okay, as we're testing this new ad builder platform, yes, people can play the ad or play the song right from the ad, but they can also click through. You can create a call to action. So to really test something, I wanted to create an ad experience where I could really understand and funnel the traffic the way I wanted to. So what I did was I created an ad with a video, and I chose a video that's us doing an acoustic cover of Tears for Fears. We had posted a couple years ago, and people liked it. The video does well, but you know, we're not YouTube stars, so I knew there wasn't a lot of natural traffic coming to this video at this moment. So that was what I was choosing. I thought, hey, this might be a way for people that don't know us into the band. That's a song that a lot of people know and like. But then on my Bandzoogle website, go get a Bandzoogle website. They're awesome. I created a hidden page that also included that video. So when people clicked through, they would land on this page where they could still watch the video or they could sign up to our email list. And this way, I could really tell where the traffic was coming from because this page is hidden on the website. No one else can get to it. Google doesn't see it. I verified that Google can't see it. And so all the traffic that lands there is just from the ad. And I did it for each ad type. So I had three different ads, different size banner ads, and I had three different landing pages because I really wanted to understand which ad worked better and drove the most traffic and what happened when people landed on the page. And it performed quite nicely, far superior to that Spotify ad that I spent like $250 on and getting right. a bunch of bots in Southeast Asia to click on.
Well, that's interesting because I did something almost identical. I wasn't quite as scientific as you in that I had a page on my website that was not linked to from the navigation. I didn't go so far as to like de-index it or whatever you call from Google. So people could technically search for it, but I knew that I wasn't driving traffic to it in other ways. So most of the traffic that was going to end up there was from the show.co ad. And that one definitely outperformed the identical ad that was linking people to Spotify. So which I don't really understand how that works. Like it was the same ad with different calls to action, I guess. So maybe that was just the difference, but yes, I'm trying to see how I can quickly break this down, but as I compared different options within show.co's ad builder, my worldwide targeting outperformed my English speaking and EU targeting when it came to cost per click. In the different kinds of targeting audiences, that middle tier of targeted for me outperformed premium. So that's where you're hitting up music fans, but not necessarily when they're on those big music sites. That definitely had a cheaper cost per click for me. And then within the ads themselves, I did better when I had a YouTube video as opposed to a Spotify player. So to make that simple, I guess my best combination of those things would be a YouTube video served up to a targeted audience that is global. And then when they went to my website, they're watching the video, hopefully, and then they're clicking, they go to the website where there is the same YouTube video, a Spotify player, links to other platforms, a bunch of extra information about the song if they kind of really want to go deep into it. And then some of the additional benefits I'm noticing is that page is pixeled. So if for some reason I do want to hit them up on Facebook or Instagram, it's easy to do that. And as I was running these ads, I was noticing a boost in my email subscribers for that week or two that I was doing this stuff. And so, you know, I have an email capture form that pops up automatically, and people were coming in through that too. So, you know, there's just a whole bunch more sort of cumulative results or results that felt tangible. The ad itself was monetized and driving plays. People were actually coming to my website. I was actually getting email subscribers at a greater rate than I normally do. It was nice to see after doing the Instagram stories ad where I was just like, wow, I'm spending money and I'm really seeing nothing. In fact, my monthly, what do you call it on Spotify though? The monthly listeners statistic was going down as
same
I was
for me. Same for me.
For his video ad. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
And that's exactly what happened to me. I'm like, this is getting worse. This is getting worse.
Money to hurt myself somehow, and I don't even know how I'm hurting myself.
No, the great thing is, like with the video especially, it's real easy. Like you log in to your video analytics, and there's like when you look at all your videos, there's like a little analytics icon. You click on that, and then if you shorten it to just the time frame that your ad is running. And then there's this advanced button that you click and it breaks things down even more. You can see directly the traffic from the ad because it calls it, there's a couple ad exchanges that, you know, the ads run through that it gets labeled as. So it's super easy to see. I got plays on my video, got a considerable amount of traffic to the website that actually surprised me because, again, I had three ads. I had three landing pages that were completely in isolation. The only way people could get to them is through these ads. And there was more traffic there than I expected. And I picked up a couple emails, subscribers, and stuff like that. So it's like, okay, now see the next step and the next piece that we're building is now I want to be able to retarget those people. And that's what will be coming up next. But it felt like my ad had more of a purpose. I just wasn't throwing a video out there and hoping magically Spotify plays would go up, that I had a point. They could watch the video, they could click through and land on a landing page where they could give an email address or also watch the video there just in case there's somebody that sees an ad and just assumes that a play button means they still have to click through. And it felt like I got something for my money, and also that these were people that were very interested. Now, the one stat I need to share that's pretty important, and this is one of the tests I did, and we were going through some of the results just to see how it compared. The watch time that I got on the video, that's one thing that Facebook talks about all the time is watch time. And you'll notice there's a 1 second, there's three, there's 10, and you can optimize for each of these. And then they start to break it down by percentage, like 25%, 50%, 75%, 100%. So they watched that percentage of the video. You'll notice that when you start getting into the 50% range, your cost to get somebody to watch that much is pretty spendy. That's why Facebook likes to put your focus back on the 3 second or 10 second, which 10 seconds can still be quite a bit of jump in cost for a cost per, you know, getting someone to watch that much. The average watch time for my video with these ads was 50%. And so,
wow.
And this was with all, there was some that went down to like 48%, or there was one ad I ran where it was like 48 seconds. But the ad that, one of the ads, the average time was like 1 minute 24 or something like that, which was almost was basically half the video, because like a 2.5 minute to a minute 45 second song. And so that was something that was really interesting to dive into, and it was almost like this aha moment, like, oh yeah, if you know, these people were actually watching. And that's where kind of the light bulb went off with me, like maybe I had a smaller amount of people watching. But when I go back to my Facebook ads and actually look at people that watched half the video, I paid less with show.co, and right, it's probably about the same amount of number of people. But when you think about in context, again, on those websites, people are actively looking at music. And so it's not as much of a disruption for them to push the play button and sit there and listen for a minute.
And not only that, so like I know earlier I said I had better luck or better cost per click with the targeted group, which is not the premium websites that you're talking about. But I bet it's true that to some degree, when you're putting ads in the premium group and they end up on Billboard or MTV or whatever, Pitchfork, some people will see those and know it's an ad. But I wonder if there's also an effect where it almost just looks like editorial content. Like you've snuck your video right in there because it's a playable video and doesn't really look like an ad. Particularly what, you know, you have your text that you can do, your call to action and your little blurb and stuff. Depending on how you use that, you might even be convincing people that it's, yeah, content being presented by Pace Magazine. So people are more likely to click and listen or watch, and then they stick around because, again, they think this is being editorially recommended to them.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, I'm planning on doing a little bit more experimenting with messaging. And with that in mind, like someone is at a music website, what can I say that makes it feel that this is more a part of the experience? And so thinking about that, and with the platform, you don't need anything other than a link in order to make an ad. Like you can, there's a thing to change the color and the call to action, all that. It's all there, but you can upload a background image. And so I haven't experimented with that at all. So I think if you upload a background image and have copy on the image itself, there's ways to make it feel a little bit more a part of the ecosystem, or maybe just make it more special and try different things that, you know, the ad generator is not going to do on its own. So yeah, it's interesting. But that video stat, when we uncovered that, I was pretty floored because, you know, same when we were talking about that Instagram stories ad, all the click metrics looked amazing. It looked like it was accomplishing exactly what I wanted, but not a single growth in streams in those areas where those things, and then sort of this weird retraction that happened when the ad was running. And then when I turned it off, it kind of went back up. So that made me wonder if Spotify was like, why is all this traffic from India suddenly coming to there?
Well, I think so. Like, so when I wrote about this new interactive ads tool on our website or on our blog, rather, I wrote, not all clicks are created equal. And I think, so first of all, I should say for like the real Facebook, Instagram ad wizards, I know there would have been ways, as my Instagram ad was running, to start limiting the targeting more and more and more, and to constantly stay on top of what countries and territories are, you know, junk clicks versus legit ones, or to, you can do the IP targeting, so you know they're at least in the country rather than having been in the country, all these weird things you can do. But I'm like, that is a lot of work. It's a lot of constant upkeep and studying to know week to week or month to month what the best practices are. And ultimately, in the end, I'm like, for literally, you know, 1% of the effort, I went on show.co and immediately got better results. And I didn't have to do a bunch of ad wizardry and you know, optimizing and constant tweaking. But yeah, I did think that maybe Spotify was saying, oh, these interesting territories are sending clicks our way. These might not be that legit.
Yeah. And it's hard to tell sometimes what your results are. And that's why Chris and I are spending our own cash, so you don't have to waste it. And we can just tell you what works and what doesn't.
We can tell you how to quickly make your monthly listeners on Spotify decrease.
The one that Instagram stories ad is where I felt like I was getting caught up in it a little bit too much, and almost like someone at a slot machine realizing you feel like you're winning at first, and then you're just like dropping more in and more in and realizing, whoa, this is getting worse and worse. I better stop.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll be trying more things and running more ads and letting you know more best practices as people use the platform and let us know what's working for them and the things that they're trying and the results they're getting. again, if you'd like to try it, just head on over to, if you haven't used show.co yet, go to your CD Baby dashboard. There's a free marketing tools link there. Click on that. That'll connect your account to show.co. And then this is the interactive ad type. So you click the ad builder link and there's several ad types you can run. And this is the interactive ad. And it's easy and fun. And if you use the coupon code podcast10, you will get $10 free. And you can try it out and get a feel for the options. And yeah.
Before we leave the topic, I just wanted to say for anyone who's really geeky and wants to know kind of what metrics you can see when you're running an ad, you're going to get full reporting of the total impressions. You'll also get a list of all the websites where it appeared and how the impressions and clicks were spread across those URLs. You'll see a sort of overall total clicks. You'll see your click-through rate percentage, your cost per click, and then you'll also see something called total engagement, which, if I'm not mistaken, is basically anyone who clicks to engage with the music player or video player on your ad. So
it's the ad. Jason just showed me, he even sent me a diagram. It's any total engagement is if they did anything with the ad, any sort of click. So it's a combined play and or banner portion click.
Right, which is cool because then you can see not only who clicked through your ad to go to the destination where you want them to end up, but you know, by some quick math, you can figure out, well, how many people just wanted to hear the song or watch the video on the ad itself.
Yeah, exactly. So you can kind of tell what action, if the call to action is really strong, maybe you're realizing, hey, my ad's working and they're clicking through, but maybe you wanted them to just hit the play button. So some of the testing that I've been doing is really sort of getting at times silly with the call to action, just to try different things out. Like initially, when they first gave us this tool in the form inside of show.co, I logged in and it said, put your headline here. And so I wasn't sure how big it could get on the ad. So I typed in, how big can it get? And I left that as my headline. So I've been trying just like what grabs someone's attention on a website. But, you know, so you can get fun with it or try things because it might be that you want to direct people that, hey, there's a play button, just push the play button. Or it may be that, you know, clicking the video is great or going to the website where the website had the video as well. So either way is fine. So you can play around with it and try different things and sort of think about what the person might be doing when they see this ad. And is it easier just to direct them to the play button? Or is there a benefit also if they click through, like they could get a free download or something? Who knows? You know, whatever you come up with.
And just to restate, one other thing you said at the very beginning of this is that there is a $20 minimum to run an ad. But when you think about the quality of the places where your ad is going to be placed, that is crazy cheap and affordable compared to the minimums that you'd be seeing if you were, you know, going with some ad agency or whatever. Like these are super accessible. It's making this kind of access very accessible.
Yeah. Yeah. These are some great placements on these websites. So it's very exciting. All right. Well, let's move on. We've got a few listener questions. Again, don't forget that coupon podcast10. And as we get into these questions, if you've got a question or comment and you want to weigh in on something, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And we've got a couple from Twitter. I actually put out a little call on Twitter before we started recording and got a couple of good questions, and we've got an email. So I'm going to start with Twitter. This one is from Johnny DeVitas. I'm not sure how you pronounce the last name. Can any song be licensed? For example, a song that was published but from an obscure band that no longer exists. Their label no longer exists, etc. Can license rights be acquired? I hate to record a song only to find I can't actually publish it. Thanks. That must be a really obscure song that he wants to cover. The general rule is that anything that has been released publicly falls under the, you know, the compulsory right, that once it's been released publicly and, you know, distributed out there, that anyone can cover the song assuming they get the rights. So I don't know, Chris, what do you think about this situation where he's, I don't know how obscure is obscure and things no longer existing.
Well, so I guess, can you just restate it, the problem? So he's covering an obscure song and can't locate, like no one can license it because the publisher.
I'm not sure if he's tried yet. It just says, can license rights be acquired? He wants to, it's an obscure band that no longer exists and their label no longer exists.
I mean, I think legally, yes. Forget, you'd have to, what do you have to do with the, if you can't find who the publisher is to pay, don't you like, you sort of make some sort of letter of intention and then you just set aside those mechanical royalties until that person comes calling? Is that the?
I believe that's correct. Chris and I are not lawyers. And that sounds about right. And I know that some things are changing with the MLC so that for downloads, Apple and Amazon will be able to would be able to have a blanket download license. And so artists wouldn't have to pay that either, similar to how streaming works. But yeah, that would be my recommendation. My recommendation would be to first of all, you need to know the songwriter and publisher information. So you're going to need to get in contact with somebody who has that information, whether it's the label or someone from the band, because you can't distribute it without that information. You need to know who wrote the songs. You need to know who the publisher is. You may be able to find that information like on ASCAP or something like that. That would be a start, because if you can't find that, you're going to have a lot of trouble. I'd try reaching out to one of the band members also, see if they can help. But if you have the publisher and songwriter information and like someplace like ASCAP has the songs listed, then you should be fine with distributing it. And someone like, if ASCAP has it, then it'd be able to, you'd be able to use Easy Song Licensing to track down the license for it.
There we go. I think we've fumbled our way through that one without giving official legal advice.
I think at least 50% of what we just said was true. Hey, you know, weathermen can get away with it. Why can't we?
We have better luck with music copyright law than weathermen. Yeah.
The good thing is when I say wrong stuff, I get emails, so I'll be able to correct it. James Haining asks, how long is too long for a song to be commercially viable? And I'm assuming he's talking about the length of the song. This one's an interesting one because I think there's lots of different opinions on that now. When we were back in our label days, it would have been 3 minutes. 3 minutes is, you know, 2.5 minutes to 3.5 minutes was the window, but 3 minutes was sort of like, you want a song on radio and to have a commercial hit, it needs to be around that mark. 4 minutes, you really had to be an artist of reputation or written the most amazing song to get that on the radio. Anything over that, you're crazy.
You know what's interesting is, I don't know if it's how you read that question or if you left a word out or my brain just skipped something, but I took it to be a completely different question altogether. I thought what was being asked is, how long does a song have in order to become commercially, like, when's the expiration date on the possibilities of this song going somewhere?
Yeah. You know what? That's how I read it the first time I read it. And then I went back and read it and it says, how long is too long for a song to be commercially viable?
Oh yeah. Interesting.
We can answer the other question too. Which I think both of these things are shifted. So my answer I just gave was like, that's what back in the day when labels made records, pitched it to radio, and lived and died by radio success, that would be what they would say. Now, in a streaming world, I think this can be totally different based on genre, because so many subgroups and sub-musical cultures exist now. you know, there's some groups that are making songs that are like micro songs. They're like just long enough to trigger the Spotify payment. And it's like a hook and you're out. Like a lot of lo-fi music is really short and it works for that genre. But then you have genres that I think that communities have formed around, like the jam band genres and some of the like maybe classical or just other groups that like a certain style of music that are perfectly happy with the song being long and there's no radio gatekeeper trying to keep the song shorter or no A&R guy. So I think it can be really genre specific. However, I will say that in a playlist world or a world where people might be listening to streaming services sort of as radio, but or in a playlist, it's okay, in my opinion, to have a longer intro, but you don't want the random crap at the beginning of songs that used to show up on albums. I've mentioned on past episodes, I've been listening to a lot of Pink Floyd lately.
And Shine On You Crazy Diamond with its like yes. 2 minute synth pad before the guitar even comes in or whatever.
Well, and then there's just some like rumblings and like some sounds like someone left the mic open and there's a radio on. I mean, and it's all really quiet. So clearly this album, you know, these songs were made and not in, to be listened in album context. Like I'm going to sit down and listen to Pink Floyd. It's an experience. That's not how people experience music in a playlist. And so people would skip that song. So I don't think it has to be super short, but I think you have to be aware that the context of when people are listening may not be just in the context of I'm going to listen to this artist's music. And if only your hardcore fans would be into what you did for a minute and a half before the guitar comes in, you might want to rethink that.
Yeah. And then to just quickly answer the other interpretation of the question, well, I mean, commercial success, who knows, but success as defined as finding an audience and maybe making money from the song, it will never expire. You can find opportunities for your music 35, 50 years after it's been out, even if no one ever listened to it, you know, for the first 50 years. There might be some thing, a playlist placement, a sync placement, something that finds its moment for that song.
Yeah, agreed. And we've seen some great success stories by independent artists that their music was out for a couple years and it's been out for a couple years and not really seen any commercial success. And then suddenly something happens and there's, you know, a lot of good stuff happening. That would not have happened back in the label days that so many people say they wish we'd go back to. That just would not. You've got, when your album came out, you had about a 2 week window, a month if you were lucky, to have some sales numbers that made your music worthy enough to keep in the shelf space. Because if you didn't sell, they'd move it off the shelf and put something else in its place because shelf space was limited. And even after a while, your album would eventually get removed. So there was like this one to 2 year window for a successful album to even be featured. And then you kind of, maybe there'd be one copy, some stuff would be in the bargain bin. We're in a time of infinite shelf space, so that doesn't happen. So there's not this time, ticking time bomb once you release your music that nothing happened in the first month. Oh, I guess nobody's going to like this music. It could happen 2 years later. It could happen 4 years later. There's all sorts of storylines that we see that we can see so many artists in the data that, you know, something clicks and suddenly a song that's been out for 10 years is suddenly generating revenue like a hit. It's, to me, that's one of the coolest reasons or coolest things about the current climate we find ourselves in, that there's no rules that say any song has a shelf life or that a song from 2 years ago needs to start moving down the priority because we just don't have space for it. Here we got one more email and I'll wrap it up. Hi, Kevin and Chris. I was glad to hear your voices back in the feed today. Thanks for once again bringing such helpful information. My songs are all set up with Content ID for YouTube and Facebook, but I'm wondering if Content ID would recognize a version of my song with no vocals. I don't want to officially release a version like this, but I usually export a version with no vocals to use as background music behind some of my videos. I teach private piano and guitar lessons and sometimes post promotion videos with some background music. I'm going to let a YouTuber use one of these instrumental tracks, and I'm wondering if it will get picked up by YouTube Content ID. Thanks, Dan.
I don't know if you asked our YouTube experts. My suspicion is absolutely it would be detected.
Yeah, it really depends on the song, but it most likely will. But it does depend on the song and how different like the instrumental version might be. If it's literally like you muted the vocal, chances are it will, because the first portion of the song is very critical in that fingerprinting. But if it's something where it starts with the vocal, there's a chance it may not. But if it's like you've got a 20-second intro, even with the vocal version, then there's a good chance it will. You can submit the instrumental versions just for Content ID with us. I've done that before. I'm not sure that it made a huge difference, but I had a bunch of instrumental versions of a past band that were getting used in YouTube videos. And so having the instrumental version in Content ID probably helps the accuracy of them finding it. I think you're probably fine. My suggestion would be if you're seeing the videos and it's grabbing the Content ID, you're golden. If it seems like it's not, let us know and we might be able to do something so you don't have to redistribute it.
Well, that's a good point. You could test it by uploading a video, right? To his own channel.
Yep.
Using one of those little instrumental snippets. And then if the warning pops up, then you're all good.
All right. Well, that's all the questions we have for today. If you'd like to ask us something and get marginal advice back. No.
Oh, you know, I thought of one other thing I should mention. That last episode, I threatened to go live on Facebook and talk about rejection. And I have since done that on, I think, Wednesday of this week. I went live on CD Baby's Facebook page, and for an hour I talked about rejection, and I even did a screen share of my Submit Hub rejections, and we had a great talk where we all just cried together. And if anyone wants to watch me humiliate myself,
was it just you? How did I miss this?
It was just me. I decided I should just go live while it was top of mind. a lot of people watched. It got a lot of views and a lot of people commenting and talking about their own ways of pressing through rejection and stuff like that. So it was fun. So check that out on CD Baby's Facebook page.
Well, you know, if you want to share your craziest rejection story with us, that would be a fun one. So yeah, questions, comments, and rejection stories, 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com.
Yeah, and rejection could be, you know, a club booker or a festival promoter who said no. It could be a terrible review you got, or it could even just be your great uncle Ned told you to, you know, get a job at a bank because you suck and you're never going to go anywhere.
Sounds like we need to get you on the couch and just dive into some of these issues.
Well, you know what? I had an uncle Fred who was the exact opposite. He was super supportive. And lest my uncle Fred is listening and think I'm calling him out, that wasn't a true story.
Well, I had an uncle tell me I was never going to make any money. Boy, did I prove him wrong.
Well, money. Well, you have a Grammy nomination hanging on your wall, even if you were broke.
That's true. I was broke when that happened. We almost didn't go because we were so broke. We didn't know how we'd get there. All right. Well, anything else? Do we have anything else there? This feels like we just ended.
Yeah. We'll just say peace out.
All right. Well, Chris, enjoy your vacation, and hopefully I'm going to be getting some new ads up and be trying some new things. And I've got a few other promotional things I've been trying that I haven't really talked much about on the podcast, but will be shortly, so that should be fun. And yeah, more episodes coming, so
can't wait.
See you.
See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.